Chapter 14. Clear by shaking it, Mrs. Tetherby put the baby away in a cradle, and, folding her arms, sat rocking it angrily with her foot. "How you stand there, Dolphus," said Mrs. Tetherby to her husband. "Why don't you do something?" "Because I don't care about doing anything," Mr. Tetherby replied. "I am sure I don't," said Mrs. Tetherby. "I'll take my oath I don't," said Mr. Tetherby. A diversion arose here among Johnny and his five younger brothers, who, in preparing the family breakfast table, had fallen to skirmishing for the temporary possession of the loaf, and were buffeting one another with great heartiness. The smallest boy of all, with precocious discretion, hovering outside the knot of combatants, and harassing their legs. Into the midst of this fray, Mr. and Mrs. Tetherby both precipitated themselves with great ardor, as if such ground were the only ground on which they could now agree, and having, with no visible remains of their late soft-heartedness, laid about them without any lenity, and done much execution, resumed their former relative positions. "You had better read your paper than do nothing at all," said Mrs. Tetherby. "What's there to read in a paper?" returned Mr. Tetherby, with excessive discontent. "What?" said Mrs. Tetherby. "Police." "It's nothing to me," said Tetherby. "What do I care what people do, or are done to?" "Suicides," suggested Mrs. Tetherby. "No business of mine," replied her husband. "Births, deaths, and marriages, are those nothing to you?" said Mrs. Tetherby. "If the births were all over for good, and all today, and the deaths were all to begin to come off tomorrow, I don't see why it should interest me, till I thought it was a coming to my turn," grumbled Tetherby. "As to marriages, I've done it myself. I know quite enough about them." To judge from the dissatisfied expression of her face and manner, Mrs. Tetherby appeared to entertain the same opinions as her husband. But she opposed him, nevertheless, for the gratification of quarreling with him. "Oh, you're a consistent man," said Mrs. Tetherby, "and you? You, with a screen of your own making there, made of nothing else but bits of newspapers, which you sit and read to the children by the half hour together." "Say used to, if you please," returned her husband. "You won't find me doing so anymore. I'm wiser now." "Bah! Wiser, indeed," said Mrs. Tetherby. "Are you better?" The question sounded some discordant note in Mr. Tetherby's breast. He ruminated dejectedly, and passed his hand across and across his forehead. "Better," murmured Mr. Tetherby. "I don't know as any of us are better, or happier either. Better, is it?" He turned to the screen, and traced about it with his finger, until he found a certain paragraph, of which he was in quest. "This used to be one of the family favorites, I recollect," said Tetherby, in a forlorn and stupid way, "and used to draw tears from the children, and make 'em good, if there was any little bickering or discontent among 'em, next to the story of the robin redbreasts in the wood. Melancholy case of destitution. Yesterday a small man, with a baby in his arms, and surrounded by half a dozen ragged little ones, of various ages between 10 and 2, the whole of whom were evidently in a famishing condition, appeared before the worthy magistrate, and made the following recital." "Ha! I don't understand it, I'm sure," said Tetherby. "I don't see what it has got to do with us." "How old and shabby he looks," said Mrs. Tetherby, watching him. "I never saw such a change in a man. Ah! Dear me, dear me, dear me, it was a sacrifice." "What was a sacrifice?" her husband sourly inquired. Mrs. Tetherby shook her head, and without replying in words, raised a complete sea storm about the baby, by her violent agitation of the cradle. "If you mean your marriage was a sacrifice, my good woman," said her husband. "I do mean it," said his wife. "Why, then I mean to say," pursued Mr. Tetherby, as sulkily and surlily as she, "that there are two sides to that affair, and that I was the sacrifice, and that I wish the sacrifice hadn't been accepted. I wish it hadn't, Tetherby, with all my heart and soul I do assure you, said his wife. You can't wish it more than I do, Tetherby. I don't know what I saw in her, muttered the newsman. I'm sure, certainly, if I saw anything, it's not there now. I was thinking so, last night, after supper, by the fire. She's fat, she's aging, she won't bear comparison with most other women. He's common-looking, he has no air with him, he's small, he's beginning to stoop, and he's getting bald, muttered Mrs. Tetherby. I must have been half out of my mind when I did it, muttered Mr. Tetherby. My senses must have forsook me. That's the only way in which I can explain it to myself, said Mrs. Tetherby with elaboration. In this mood they sat down to breakfast. The little Tetherbys were not habituated to regard that meal in the light of a sedentary occupation, but discussed it as a dancer trot, rather resembling a savage ceremony, in the occasionally shrill whoops and brandishings of bread and butter with which it was accompanied, as well as in the intricate filings off into the street and back again, and the hoppings up and down the doorsteps, which were incidental to the performance. In the present instance, the contentions between these Tetherby children for the milk and water jug, common to all, which stood upon the table, presented so lamentable an instance of angry passions risen very high indeed, that it was an outrage on the memory of Dr. Watts. It was not until Mr. Tetherby had driven the whole herd out at the front door that a moment's peace was secured. And even that was broken by the discovery that Johnny had surreptitiously come back, and was at that instant choking in the jug like a ventriloquist, in his indecent and rapacious haste. These children will be the death of me at last, said Mrs. Tetherby, after banishing the culprit. And the sooner the better, I think. Poor people, said Mr. Tetherby, ought not to have children at all. They give us no pleasure. He was at that moment taking up the cup which Mrs. Tetherby had rudely pushed towards him, and Mrs. Tetherby was lifting her own cup to her lips, when they both stopped, as if they were transfixed. Here! Mother! Father! Cried Johnny, running into the room. Here's Mrs. William coming down the street. And if ever, since the world began, a young boy took a baby from a cradle with the care of an old nurse, and hushed and soothed it tenderly, and tottered away with it cheerfully, Johnny was that boy, and Mollich was that baby, as they went out together. Mr. Tetherby put down his cup. Mrs. Tetherby put down her cup. Mr. Tetherby rubbed his forehead. Mrs. Tetherby rubbed hers. Mr. Tetherby's face began to smooth and brighten. Mrs. Tetherby's began to smooth and brighten. Why, Lord forgive me, said Mr. Tetherby to himself, what evil tempers have I been giving way to? What has been the matter here? How could I ever treat a mill again, after all I said and felt last night? Sobbed Mrs. Tetherby, with her apron to her eyes. Am I a brute, said Mr. Tetherby, or is there any good in me at all? Sophia, my little woman. Dolphus dear, returned his wife. I've been in a state of mind, said Mr. Tetherby, that I can't bear to think of, Sophy. Oh, it's nothing to what I've been in, Dolph, cried his wife in a great burst of grief. My Sophia, said Mr. Tetherby, don't take on. I never shall forgive myself. I must have nearly broke your heart, I know. No, Dolph, no. It was me. Me. Cried Mrs. Tetherby. My little woman, said her husband, don't. You make me reproach myself dreadful, when you show such a noble spirit. Sophia, my dear, you don't know what I thought. I showed it bad enough, no doubt, but what I thought, my little woman. Oh, dear Dolph, don't. Don't. Cried his wife. Sophia, said Mr. Tetherby, I must reveal it. I couldn't rest in my conscience, unless I mentioned it. My little woman, Mrs. Williams very nearly here, screamed Johnny at the door. My little woman, I wondered how, gasped Mr. Tetherby, supporting himself by his chair, I wondered how I had ever admired you, I forgot the precious children you have brought about me, and thought you didn't look as slim as I could wish. I never gave a recollection, said Mr. Tetherby, with severe self-accusation, to the cares you've had as my wife, and along of me and mine, when you might have had hardly any with another man, who got on better, and was luckier than me. Anybody might have found such a man easily, I am sure, and I quarreled with you for having aged a little in the rough years you have lightened for me. Can you believe it, my little woman? I hardly can myself. Mrs. Tetherby, in a whirlwind of laughing and crying, caught his face within her hands, and held it there. Oh, Dolph, she cried. I am so happy that you thought so. I am so grateful that you thought so. For I thought that you were common-looking, Dolph. And so you are, my dear, and may you be the commonest of all sights in my eyes, till you close them with your own good hands. I thought that you were small. And so you are, and I'll make much of you because you are, and more of you, because I love my husband. I thought that you began to stoop, and so you do, and you shall lean on me, and I'll do all I can to keep you up. I thought there was no air about you, but there is, and it's the air of home, and that's the purest and the best there is, and God bless home once more, and all belonging to it, Dolph. Hurrah! Here's Mrs. William! Cried Johnny. So she was, and all the children with her, and so she came in, they kissed her, and kissed one another, and kissed the baby, and kissed their father and mother, and then ran back and flocked and danced about her, trooping on with her in triumph. Mr. and Mrs. Tetherby were not a bit behindhand in the warmth of their reception. They were as much attracted to her as the children were. They ran towards her, kissed her hands, pressed round her, could not receive her ardently or enthusiastically enough. She came among them like the spirit of all goodness, affection, gentle consideration, love, and domesticity. What, are you all so glad to see me too, this bright Christmas morning? Said Millie, clapping her hands in a pleasant wonder. Oh dear, how delightful this is! More shouting from the children, more kissing, more trooping round her, more happiness, more love, more joy, more honor, on all sides, than she could bear. Oh dear, said Millie, what delicious tears you make me shed. How can I ever have deserved this? What have I done to be so loved? Who can help it? Cried Mr. Tetherby. Who can help it? Cried Mrs. Tetherby. Who can help it? Echoed the children, in a joyful chorus. And they danced and trooped about her again, and clung to her, and laid their rosy faces against her dress, and kissed and fondled it, and could not fondle it, or her, enough. I never was so moved, said Millie, drying her eyes, as I have been this morning. I must tell you, as soon as I can speak. Mr. Redlaw came to me at sunrise, and with a tenderness in his manner, more as if I had been his darling daughter than myself, implored me to go with him to where William's brother George is lying ill. We went together, and all the way along he was so kind, and so subdued, and seemed to put such trust and hope in me, that I could not help trying with pleasure. When we got to the house, we met a woman at the door. Somebody had bruised and hurt her, I am afraid, who caught me by the hand, and blessed me as I passed. She was right, said Mr. Tetherby. Mrs. Tetherby said she was right. All the children cried out that she was right. Ah, but there's more than that, said Millie. When we got upstairs, into the room, the sick man who had lain for hours in a state from which no effort could rouse him, rose up in his bed, and, bursting into tears, stretched out his arms to me, and said that he had led a misspent life, but that he was truly repentant now, in his sorrow for the past, which was all as plain to him as a great prospect, from which a dense black cloud had cleared away, and that he entreated me to ask his poor old father for his pardon and his blessing, and to say a prayer beside his bed. And when I did so, Mr. Redlaw joined in it so fervently, and then so thanked and thanked me, and thanked heaven, that my heart quite overflowed, and I could have done nothing but sob and cry, if the sick man had not begged me to sit down by him, which made me quiet of course. As I sat there, he held my hand in his until he sank in a doze, and even then, when I withdrew my hand, to to leave him to come here, which Mr. Redlaw was very earnest indeed in wishing me to do. His hand felt for mine, so that someone else was obliged to take my place, and make believe to give him my hand back. Oh dear," said Millie, sobbing. "How thankful and how happy I should feel, and do feel, for all this." While she was speaking, Redlaw had come in, and, after pausing for a moment, to observe the group of which she was the center, had silently ascended the stairs. Upon those stairs he now appeared again, remaining there, while the young student passed him, and came running down. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.